From the porch, the river looked smoky brown sometimes, rosy and lavender when the sun was going down, then slate gray just before it turned pitch black. And so begins Rosemary Clooney's autobiography, Girl Singer. This porch was at her grandmother's house in Maysville, Kentucky, along the Ohio River. Rosemary Clooney would have been 85 on Thursday, May 23rd. Music was a big part of her family's life. Her father would sing and play the ukulele, and Rosemary and her sister Betty would sing with him. Songs by Cole Porter, Bing Crosby, or Frank Sinatra, never country. Her brother, Nick Clooney, sang with his sisters and composed songs. I'm Bill Cartwright. Tonight, you'll hear about Rosemary Clooney's career, the songs she recorded with the big bands through the years. In the first hour, her brother, Nick Clooney, talks about his memories of her life and family and friendships with Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. Broadcast historian Mike Martini recounts stories of her and her sister Betty's work at WLW Radio. And CSO violinist Stacy Woolley remembers her fondly, too. During the second hour, you'll hear stories from her dear friend Michael Feinstein, as well as jazz musician Jeff Hamilton and vocalist Amy London. Although she recorded with smaller ensembles, we thought it would be fun tonight to share her work with many of the classic big bands she performed with over the years, like Tony Pastor, Duke Ellington, and Nelson Riddle. Let's begin with Nick Clooney on tonight's two-hour special, Rosemary Clooney, Big Band Singer.
You know, I think particularly with Rosemary and Betty, they came out of the womb singing. It was innate. And we always used to say, anytime Rosemary belched, Betty had a third for it, you know. It was just a remarkable coalescence of gifts. And of course, we all loved music, and it came simply from our genes, I am sure. Our grandmother, Guilfoyle, played piano. She played the block chords and old rugged cross kind of music. My aunt Anne was a blues singer, and Aunt Olivette was a pianist and a composer and very talented, and had her own band in 1914, leading a band, not quite the usual thing for a young woman in those days to do, but she was quite the feminist. And then, of course, we sang every Sunday, not just in church, but when we would come back from church, and if we hadn't been able to talk anybody into a dime for us to go to the movie, everybody in the family had to sing something or say something or do a poem or do something, and everyone had to perform. The door between the living room and the dining room was our proscenium arch, and you got to stand up there and sing something. Usually it was something we had just seen in a movie the prior week. The family legacy, what I miss most of all, of course, is the laughter. She was a funny dame, you know, and we were a funny family. Betty was funnier than she was, and I have my moments. So when we got together, it was all laughter, wall-to-wall fun, laughter, and heaven help anyone who wasn't there, because that means that they were going to be talked about, and heaven knows what that characterization would be by the time we were through with them. They were just wonderful and great people. We also had the Opera House, which was called the Washington Theater at that time. So, and that was, I think that was a nickel to go there. And then it also had performance space because it had been a vaudeville house. So Rosemary and Betty, particularly as a sister team, did duets there every time there was an amateur hour. And there always was one, once a month. And eventually, when I got old enough to croak a little bit, we would be a trio for a while, and we would all show up almost always at the Opera Theater, which, as I say, was set up with a stage. The other movie house, the Russell Theater, was a palace. It was a movie palace with not performance space. It was all for movies.
This is Mike Martini. We're talking about the Clooney girls. In the early days, their very first performances, apparently Rosemary Clooney, I guess as her father or grandfather, was mayor of Maysville, was a politician in Maysville. And so he would employ the girls to sing at these little campaign speeches. So they would come out in their little dresses and sing a couple songs, and then he would give his political speech, and then they would sing maybe a few more songs. So that was their first, I think, foray into show business, was kind of doing these political campaign speeches or these visits in downtown Maysville when they were just little girls. But Nick always talked about how they loved radio. They used to sneak up into the attic when they were all still together as a family down in Maysville and listen to some of the old radio shows like Lights Out. They'd listen up in the attic, even though their parents weren't too thrilled about that. Betty and Rosie, I think the big thing is the fact that they've talked about this over the years, is that they were absolutely 100% bound and determined to get into show business. And it wasn't a question of how they would do it. It was a question of when and how fast they could do it. And so the only thing that kind of got in their way, I think, was some family issues and divorces and things like that, where the family was kind of split at that time. But eventually, Rosie and Betty did end up in Cincinnati with, I believe, their grandparents. And it was around when Betty was, we'll say, 15 and Rosie 17 that they decided to audition at WLW after school one day. And so they came down to the studios and they sang several songs, including Straighten Up and Fly Right, which is one of the recordings, fortunately, that has survived over the years.
Oh, a buzzer took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzer tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed the hold and said, "Now listen, Jack, do-do-do, straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Do, 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 straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Boom, boom, what's the use in diving? Boom, boom, ain't no use in diving. Boom, boom, straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top."
The story goes, this is the story they used to tell, that they could see huddled in the control room of that studio several of the staff members kind of talking and discussing things, very animated, and they were looking at their watches, and eventually they came out of the control room and said, "Okay, girls, we think you're hired. We think we can use you for Moon River and several programs." And Betty, who was the younger, but also the more outgoing and outspoken one, apparently piped up and said, "That's fine, but we would like a 25-cent advance on our first salary." Apparently they had these school cards to get them home on the trolley or bus or whatever at that time, and it had expired by that time, so they had to get a little money to get home. That was the big story that they liked to tell over and over. But their stay here at WLW in Cincinnati was brief, about a year, a little over a year, before Tony Pastor found them and discovered them and took them away. And they did a couple programs. I think they had an after-school program for a while. They sang on Crossroads Cafe and Moon River. But sadly, not a lot of their recordings exist today, because this was still the World War II, post-World War II era, when there were limits on aluminum. And it was, of course, the aluminum platter that was the base of the acetate disc upon which these programs were recorded. And so when World War II occurred, they had to actually use glass base masters. And sadly, these discs were so very fragile, even for back then, that very few exist today. And so we don't have a whole lot of audio recorded material of the Clooney girls at WLW, sadly, because of that. And also, the shows that they were on were not shows that were typically recorded. Moon River, they would record an occasional one now and then, but it was really the 15-minute version of Moon River that was syndicated with Peter Grant and the Divorce Sisters that was recorded during that period. So by all accounts, the staff loved them. They were very popular. They apparently enjoyed their time here, and it was just the fact that Tony Pastor came along and offered him kind of a national touring event that they decided to move on. Of course, Betty Clooney came back to Cincinnati after Rosie decided to go solo in late 1940, I guess it was around 49, 1950. Betty came back to WLW and was a staff member for several years, appearing on radio and on television. And so she came back. But really, Rosie came back a lot, too. Recently, I've been doing a lot of research into Doris Day, and I compare the two. Whereas publicly, Doris Day has said she could never sing again. She gets nervous listening to her old music because she's afraid of public perception. Whereas Rosie really didn't care about public perception. She just loved to be an entertainer. And I think that is why Rosie enjoyed such a wonderful second career in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, where she reinvented herself as kind of a jazz singer and recorded with Dinah Krall and several others on the Concord label. She knew her voice had changed. Everyone's voice changes when they get older. But Rosie didn't care. She just loved to perform and loved to sing, and she was very public about it. She came back to Cincinnati many occasions, came back to Maysville for the annual Clooney concert, had a house in Augusta, is buried in Maysville. So unlike some performers, Rosie still continued to embrace her roots here in the Midwest throughout her career. She was never embarrassed by it. She always embraced the fact that she was from this area of the country. And so that's one of the things I really love about Rosie. She's one of those people that just everyone around her seemed to adore her. And I think this traced all the way back to those early days when she was singing on WLW with Betty as the Clooney sisters.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman arrived from Rome, she wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together, the same in the rain or sun. Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Those who seen us know that not a thing can come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord, help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord, help the sister who comes between me and my man. Stick together, the same in the rain or sun. Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Uh-huh. Those who've seen us know that not a thing could come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord, help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord, help the sister who comes between me and my man. Sisters, sisters, sister, don't come between me and my man.
She traveled with only Tony Pastor, but for some time. And of course, all the bands on the, I traveled with them too, was Supercargo. And so it would be Rosemary, Betty, Uncle George, and I. It was a traveling caravan there. But they would cross one another. You know, there'd be Charlie Barnett would be over here, and Ralph Flanagan would be over there, and all the great bands, the Benny Goodmans and the Woody Hermans and all of those, they would be out on the road and you'd cross. As a matter of fact, the big bands all had their softball or baseball teams. If it was Harry James, it had to be baseball. It is said that he hired several musicians only because they were good baseball players. It had nothing to do with their musicianship. And those were fiercely contested. And Rosemary, when she started making movies, she had softball teams from the movies she was making as well. And they were, once again, very competitive. But you got to know the musicians in each one of these. You'd cross Atlantic City or Steel Pier, or you'd be way out in the Hustings somewhere, you know, Revere Beach in Massachusetts or any other. And you would meet one another. And after the show, whenever that was, you would go and get a sandwich and a coffee. Very few were drinkers, certainly not Rosemary and Betty. They were kids. Even the others drank very little because they were working all the time. They were either on the bus or they were sleeping or they were working, and that was all their lives when they were on the road. But they did meet one another, and they did go to listen to each other, and they would go to jam sometimes when there were times off that were simultaneous. And there were great times, and they had most hilarious sound. They were funniest people in the world. Musicians are just intrinsically funny anyway. They take a very jaundiced view of life and a very, very funny take on everyone. It is quite an atmosphere to find yourself in. It was great education for Rosemary and Betty, and even, as an afterthought, a great education for me as well. I had a wonderful time. But Rosemary and Betty were singing, each had their solos with the Tony Pastor Band, and they sang with Tony, they accompanied Tony, and then they sang. Most of the things they did were duets. But then Rosemary started doing more solos. She was 3 years older than Betty, and she began to do more of the more mature songs that were available, Bargain Day, which was quite saucy for its time, you know, and several other songs like that, got the attention of the people at Columbia Records, who eventually offered Rosemary a contract. And she had some hits that were called regional hits back in those days. They were not national hits, but there was a song called Kid's a Dreamer, and almost no one has ever heard of it, but it was very big in certain cities, at Philadelphia. It was a very big song there. And there were other songs like that. Tiger's not a tiger if he's Mixed Emotions. That was before Rosemary had major hits. That was her regional hit that kept her employed with Columbia for a number of years because it was making some money for them. Not a big bash of money like they did once Rosemary got her national hits. But they were making enough money to keep her on the payroll.
It's bargain day. Wanna buy a heart? It's bargain day. Mine is torn apart. I'll sell it cheap, or maybe I could trade it in on a happier model. It's bargain day. Here's a pair of arms. It's bargain day. Gone are all their charms. They need somebody back to put themselves around. Where can he be found? Here we have a pair of eyes, a little dry. It's bargain day. You can name your price on bargain day. Think about it twice, for you might take these items torn with pride.
It's bargain day. Mine is torn apart. I'll sell it cheap, or maybe I could trade it in on bargain day.
Frank Sinatra signed with Columbia Records in 1943 and was beginning a career as a solo artist.
But he was not touring with Tommy Dorsey when Rosemary and Betty met him. He had a terrible crush on Betty. He would send her flowers, and Betty had a way of, when she knew that this wasn't going anywhere, you know, she would let the man know that she was not interested any longer. She was very kind, and she did it as kindly as possible by sending him a St. Christopher medal. And she sent one to Frank, and he made that that was a very big joke between Rosemary and Betty and him for years and years. He said, "I still have my St. Christopher medal." It was the way that she would say so long. But Frank had become, of course, a major solo artist long before Rosemary and Betty went on the road. He had done his road work in 1938 with Harry James and 1939 with Tommy Dorsey, and then became a solo artist by about 1941, and had done movies, Higher and Higher, and a bunch of other movies before Rosemary and Betty got on the scene. But they certainly met, and it was at a restaurant in New York called Patsy's. It was an Italian restaurant. Patsy was the first name of a wonderful Italian friend. And we still do. We go to Patsy's for our fix of Italian food in New York City. And we had very fond memories because in the days when Rosemary and Betty and then Rosemary herself were not, you know, making all that much money. And incidentally, when you worked for Columbia, you were paid once a month, not once a week. It was once a month, so you had to do that budgeting thing, and Rosemary was never very good at that. So she'd run way out of money before the end of the month, and I was working for Columbia Records, too, at that time, just a research thing, and I'd run out of money, too. And so the wonderful people down at Patsy's would put us on the cuff at the end, and we would pay them, say, about the 25th, we were through, we had no money. But we could go and get pasta from Patsy's, and they took care of us. And then we'd pay them back when we got paid on the first of the month. And that now I can, most of the time I have the money to pay him when I go in these days.
Say, Frank, you want to take a walk?
Well, sure, sweetie. Just pick a street.
Piccadilly Circus.
Oh, I'd rather not.
Champs-Élysées?
Mais non.
Times Square?
Nah. Cause there's nothing can compare with strolling along Peachtree Street with my baby on my arm. I've got the sweetest peach in Georgia, and she just came off the farm.
Strolling along Peachtree Street, I'm happy as can be. I've got to thank the state of Georgia for my baby's family tree.
Everybody in Atlanta knows what a treasure I found. I'm gonna set my gem upon the main stem.
We
spread a lot of little peaches all around. I feel like a new millionaire when I'm walking with my charm. Strolling along Peachtree Street with baby on my arm.
You like Peachtree Street, Frank?
Oh, I love the place, but where are the peach trees?
We'll have to go back a few years for
that. Well, then let's turn around.
Can't you see me in a hoop skirt strolling along Peachtree Street with a colonel on my arm?
And I can tell that you're from Georgia because you got that Georgia charm.
Strolling along
Peachtree Street, I'm happy as can be.
Miss Rosemary.
Yes, Frank.
How come the sweetest peach in Georgia hails from Maysville, Kentucky?
Let's not get it around.
I can be reached. We'll be married in Atlanta. One happy man and his spouse.
And just as sure as you're born, we'll plant us some corn
and spread a lot of little kernels round the house. I feel like a new millionaire when I'm walking with my charm, strolling along Peachtree Street with baby on my arm. Say, sugar.
What's the matter, honey child?
Well, I'm getting kind of tired. Would you rather carry me or call a cab?
Taxi!
Thank you, sweetie.
It was a long time coming. All of that time with the band, all the time on the road, all of the time with CBS. She was hired by Columbia Records, which was associated with CBS, and therefore they would have her on all of the television shows, the early Jackie Gleason show, the early Maury Amsterdam show, and she would be on all of those. And by that time, I had gotten up to, I guess, about 12 or 13, and Rosemary was on her own. Betty had come back home to Cincinnati and went to work at WLW by herself as a solo artist. Rosemary was in New York, not getting much work at the time, not very many records. She was certainly a long way from getting her first hit, which wasn't until 1951. But she was working regularly, but she was lonesome. So I would go up to New York, and there was a Murphy bed. And so I'd sleep on the floor, she'd get the Murphy bed, and I'd escort her to all of these things at age 13. So I got to meet all those wonderful people at those very early days of television. And my sister Betty was inventing television here in Cincinnati at the same time. So it was a great yeasty time to be around. Then much later, after she had her hit record, then there were things like television shows, of which she would be the central focus. And the Rosemary Clooney Show was certainly that, and that was on NBC.
Trembling trees embrace the breeze tenderly.
The Rosemary Clooney Show, with four guys called the Orchestra. And here's our star, Rosemary Clooney.
Your eyes are blue, your kisses too. I never knew what they could do. I can't believe that you're in love with me. You're telling everyone I know I'm on your mind each place you go. They can't believe that you're in love with me. I have always placed you far above me. I just can't imagine that you love me. And after all is said and done, to think that I'm the lucky one, I can't believe that you're in love with me. Your eyes are blue, your kisses too. I never knew what they could do. I can't believe that you're in love with me.
just can't imagine that you love me. And after all is said and done, to think that I'm the lucky one, I can't believe that you're in love. Can't believe that you're in love. Can't believe that you're in love with me.
Conductor-arranger Nelson Riddle worked with Rosemary Clooney over the years. She said about him, "He knew my limitations, and he knew how to cushion me in places where I might have difficulty."
I didn't know him well. I was by that time gone myself and raising a family, and with the relationship between Rosemary and Nelson started, professional and personal. I was in the Army. I was with the American Forces Network in Frankfurt, Germany, so I didn't get to know him well. I'm in touch with his daughter now. She is trying to put together a festival of his as well up in New Jersey, and I hope they get that done.
Welcome in your arms. And what about this heart you broke? How will I remember you? How could I forget a kiss so rare and a touch that carried me away out into space somewhere? Come back to me. Come back to me. We hold the secret of a special love, a love that's meant to be. How will I remember you? What a foolish question, sweetheart mine, when a thousand memories are with me nearly all the time. Come back to me. But till you do, how well will I remember you?
Oh, my. See how lucky all of us were, but particularly the great musicians, to have been born at a time when they now, they call it the Great American Songbook, and they're quite right. It's an era, and it was an era, not long, didn't last long. It was, let's say, about early 1920s, up to about the late 1940s. That's all it was, 20 or 25 years. It did not last nearly as long as, for instance, rock and roll has lasted. It did not last nearly as long as the sentimental era beforehand, the Joe Howard music and other ragtime music. But it has been enormously influential, and when you look at it, I must say, of course, this is all opinion, but mine's as good as anybody, so it is so clear and so remarkable what wonderful quality, what musicianship went into the songs of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And when we look now for the songs that we can call standard, a huge percentage, I would say literally 70 to 75% of the songs that last and are staying then and are used as the benchmark for the singer to try his or her chops out on are going to be the songs from that era. And that's Gershwin, and that's Porter, and that's Berlin, and that's all of Johnny Mercer. These are the ones that we go back to. And now, when the very talented rock artists who have emerged in the era from 1955 on, when they want to go back and test themselves, they'll have a standards album. They'll get one out there. Paul McCartney just did another one. Everyone who wants to find out what their real worth as an interpreter of songs is will look largely into that great, wonderful pool of marvelous songs. And Rosemary, of course, was one of those. She tapped that all the time. She when she was talking about Come On to My House and Mambo Italiano and Bat Jimmy and all those songs that were great hits for her, she says, boy, I really recorded a lot of junk. But she made up for it because she then recorded some of the best.
There's a saying old says that love is blind. Still we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I'm gonna seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's the big affair I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. I'd like to add his initial to my monogram. Tell me, where is the shepherd for this lost lamb? There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone who'll watch over. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who'll watch over me. To my heart, he can. tell him please to put on some speed. Follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to
Now, the Duke Ellington album, there were just great stories that she would tell me. I was not there for the Duke Ellington recording, but then neither was she, because the band had recorded in New York, and Billy Strayhorn, the arranger and majordomo for Duke Ellington, came to California, and she recorded to the tracks. And the only direction she got from Billy Strayhorn, and that would be Duke Ellington's surrogate, she was singing Mood Indigo, and she wasn't doing the lyrics to it. She was humming. She was just, and she was saying, what am I doing here, Mr. Strayhorn? And he says, Rosemary, I think you're just brushing your hair. I think you're just looking in the mirror and brushing your hair. And that's how she sang it. It was wonderful. And she loved that. She said it was the best direction she ever got. She never took direction well. But that one she got.
A soul who's bluer than blue can be. When I get that mood indigo, I could lay me down and die. You ain't been blue, no. Shoes.
and Bob Hope, they knew exactly what to say and when to say it, and they always knew when one another needed help, emotionally or in any way at all. And when Rosemary was having her terrible problems after Bobby Kennedy's assassination, and she was in the hallway when that occurred, and she had a breakdown, just had a complete breakdown, and went in and committed herself to St. John's, the very same place she had gone in Santa Monica when all five of her children were born. And nobody could get in to get in touch with her. She was completely isolated while she was going through this terrible problem. And the one who did get through first was Bob Hope, because nobody was going to say no to Bob Hope. And Bob Hope got through, and he was able to send a note to Rosemary. And all the note said was, "I hope it's a boy." Right at that moment, she felt that she had begun to heal, that she was getting better. If he could make fun of her and make her laugh, then she had begun to heal.
You got class and lots of polish. You got class, you're baby dollish. You're a comer, and like I told the plumber, baby, you got class.
Yeah, I got class, and can't you tell it? I got class, and I can sell it.
You can put your money on the butcher, he says, you got class.
I will be the boy, the toast of New York and Paris.
Whatever chance you make the most of, I hope you'll have time, place, room for me. Come on, smile and show the pearlies.
I got style for all the girlies. I'm a swell boy.
And like I told the bellboy, baby, you got class. Dash.
I got dash.
You have a dash.
In every motion.
You got splash.
I got splash.
You make a splash.
Just like the ocean.
As a dancer, baby, you're the answer. A one-man dancing class.
I'm alive.
You got Bim.
I got drive.
You got him. You got class.
C-L-A-S-S.
You got charm.
C-H-A-R-M.
You got poise.
P-O-Y-Z-E.
But most of all, you got class.
It's funny that there are so few people now who understand, and I know why. It was, a long time ago. But Bing Crosby invented the kind of singing that is now just standard, that everybody knows and everybody knows how to do and everybody. He understood the difference electronics made with the way one could communicate a song. Before that, it was all projection. And instead, he made it intimate. He invented Frank Sinatra, as Frank himself said. He invented Dean Martin, as Dean always said. You could not even imagine, including the girl crooners, could not imagine the way the lyric could be told and used and nuanced until Bing Crosby invented the way of doing that. So, unfortunately, while people quite properly give great obeisance to people like Frank and Rosemary and all the other wonderful pop singers of that era, unfortunately, we no longer pay obeisance to the source of all that, and that was Bing Crosby. And so, when Rosemary, a great fan of, she was a Bobby Soxer fan of Frank, but she knew that while Frank was a great singer, that the inventor, the source, was Bing. And so when he admired her, that meant a lot to her, and they admired the way she sang. And he was just sold on her. He just thought that she was a wonderful singer. And if she was having a bad time, he and Bob Hope and all these great men and women from that era, they had your back, as we now say. They always did. If you were in real trouble, if things were going really poorly for you, they were there to take care of you.
Yeah.
It seems to me that I've tried long enough to prove to you my love is strong enough.
Just how upset can you get?
How hard to get can you get?
I'd love to get you a small boat to China, all to myself alone. Get you and keep you in arms evermore. Leave all your lovers on a faraway shore. Out on the briny with the moon big and shining, melting your heart of stone. I'd love to get you on a slow boat to China, all to myself alone.
You're never gonna get you
on a slow boat,
not on a fast or slow boat. You're not gonna take my heart. You're not gonna break my heart.
Alone, I'm gonna make you mine.
You'll have to stand in line.
Get you and I'll keep you in my arms.
Now there's
evermore. Leave all your lovers on the shore.
For me, they'd swim to China and
tell them
back
to bring me an anvil.
Out on the briny
with a moon
not even
big and
shining. It's
melting your heart.
Or maybe we'll stay
alone. Stone, or is it made of steel?
You'll find it's very real.
Seems we're not going on a slow boat to China. Well, let's just say that we won't be there this June.
'Cause to
my wife Nina and I moved back to Kentucky and into Augusta. And as soon as Nina and I settled into a place there, gee, that was back in the 70s, Rosemary said, "Can you get me in down there?" And she would come and spend many, many weeks. Often, anytime she was on the east side of the country, she would come. So she said, "You know what? I might as well have a house here." So when she had a good year, my wife Nina picked out a house that was for sale and renovated it, and that's where Rosemary spent a great deal of the last 20 years of her life. Isn't that something? Yeah, we never got really very far from it, did we? And I physically never got very far from it, nor did Rosemary.
When you see a field where grass is blue and everything looks good to you, you're in Kentucky, sure as you're born. When a million sunbeams light your way, says, "Come on, stranger, won't you stay?" You're in Kentucky, sure as you're born. When the shadows creep, you can go to sleep on a carpet of moonbeams. You can dream your dreams neath a blanket of gleaming stars. If you wake at dawn mid glistening dew, find old Dixie kissing you. You're in Kentucky, sure as you're born. shadows creep, you can go to sleep. On a carpet of moonbeams, you can dream your dreams. 'Neath a blanket of gleaming stars. If you wake at dawn mid glistening dew, find old Dixie kissing you. You're not in Texas, you're not in Memphis, you're in Kentucky, sure as you're born.
Well, I'm Stacy Woolley with the CSO, violinist. Well, I have very fond memories of Rosemary Clooney. First of all, as a young boy growing up and sitting around the TV whenever White Christmas would air. And of course, my parents would proudly say, half of this cast is from Cincinnati. There's Rosemary Clooney and Vera Ellen. We always felt a kinship to that particular film and therefore to Rosemary Clooney and her gorgeous, rich, buttery voice. And of course, there was an additional tie in our household in that my mother went to Western Hills High School with Rosemary. And I'm an alum also of West High. Anyhow, the one and only time that I got to work with Rosemary Clooney, work closely with her, was out at Riverbend in a concert that Eric Kunzel conducted with the Pops. And I took the occasion to bring my annual from 1978, which was the 50-year annual for the school, the 50th anniversary annual. And I turned to the pages where all of the alums who had gone on to fame and glory were depicted, and there was a nice old picture of Rosemary Clooney with her sister Betty. And I opened the annual backstage and showed Rosemary and presented her a pen and said, would you mind autographing this? She wrote, for Stacy, with love and thanks, Rosemary, right above this lovely old picture of Rosemary and her sister Betty. And she remarked at the time, because they're wearing embroidered blouses, she said, you know, my aunt did that embroidery. Well, it's so wonderful to have that little bit of information and to know that after all she had been through and all the places she had been, that she remembered a little detail like that. And it just shows you something about the character of the woman and how important her family were to her.
Coming up in the next hour of tonight's special, Rosemary Clooney, big band singer, you'll hear from Michael Feinstein, Grammy Award-winning drummer Jeff Hamilton, and jazz vocalist Amy London. I'm Bill Cartwright.